everyone. This is Gordon W2TGT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. That's the proverbial right answer. All right, good evening, everyone, again. This is Gordon W2TGT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted weekly on a frequency of 146.835 MHz. The 2-meter repeater of the Venture Crew 7373 Amateur Radio Club, located in Pearl River, New York, and serving the New Jersey, New York, and Southern Connecticut area. There is no PL on the repeater right now, but if it was turned on, it would be 151.4. And again, the frequency is 146.835 with an offset of 600 kilohertz, minus 600 kilohertz. Alrighty, so this net is conducted weekly at 9 o'clock on Thursday nights for the purpose of having a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computing, telecommunications, the natural sciences, and arts of operation. And of course, it's also about our ability to, you know, enjoy and serve the community, and of course to reflect on what we've done, what we aspire to do, and very often with a little bit of humor and candor, maybe things we never want to do again. It's also an opportunity to provide us with to do for sale, swap, or wanted items. So you can do that as well. We hope that you'll join us, whether or not you want to do any of those things, because it helps us tailor the net to your needs. So even if you don't have something in the way of a topic or a question for sale, swap, or wanted item, feel free to check in. It helps us, you know, frame the net. The other thing that we should point out is we have a Yahoo group that's pretty tightly controlled. It's a closed group. It's called ComTech Group. Charlie, Oscar, Mike, Tango, Echo, Charlie, Hotel, Golf, Romeo, Oscar, Uniform, Papa. ComTech Group is the Yahoo group name. And there we continue the dialogue during the week and also post resources from the net. So we hope you'll join us. So with no further ado, we'll talk about how we check in. We check in with our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether we have a question, a comment, for sale, swap, or wanted item, some combination of those things, or none of the above. We also do this one call sign at a time. Please wait for your acknowledgement before we get the next station to jump in. Please, just like I can't type fast enough with one finger on a tablet. Alrighty, so with no further ado, stations whose call signs begin with Whiskey, please call K2BAR.
Good evening, Gordon. This is Jim, WA2UMP in Pearl River, and just listening this evening.
Good evening, Jim, WA2UMP, got you. Any other Whiskeys? Okay, how about Kilos?
Whiskey Alpha 2, Indian Sierra Echo, Bob, and brief comment.
WA2ISC, gotcha, Bob. Very good. Any other Whiskeys? Okay, how about Kilos?
K2EIR, Howie in Tarrytown. Good evening, Gordon. None of the above.
Howie, you're back. Heard you were lurking looking for me on 442 today. You're fine here, but I heard you were a little rattly before on 442. Don't know if... you got a little bit of egg fry, but you're fine. Very good. Welcome aboard. Welcome back. It's a pleasure to hear you. All right, any other Kilos?
This is KE2DKD, Bob, here in Park Ridge. I have a question on grounding, antennas, attics, outside.
Hey, Bob, could I just have your call sign phonetically?
That's Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Kilo Delta.
Okay, very good. And you have a question. Okay, very good. We'll get to that. KD2BKD, welcome aboard. I think it's your first time in, so we'd also like to hear a little bit about you. Give us a little background, if you would, when the time comes. Alrighty, any other kilos? Alrighty, how about Novembers? Okay, how about Alphas? Okay, any call sign, any format.
W2TU, Chris. Just listening as of right now.
Good evening, Chris, W2TU, we got you. Any other whiskeys? Okay, any other call signs? Okay, let's get on with it then. A couple of quick announcements. Barra will have its auction on Sunday at Westwood High School in Washington Township. Westwood High School in Washington Township on Sunday. Doors open at noon to all, and the auctioning will start at 1 o'clock. So be there, be square, it'll be fun, and there'll be food available. There'll be, I think, Meatball Heroes or Sausage and Pepper Heroes, I forget which. And also hot dogs that will be lovely, and all sorts of other yummies and beverages and things like that. So we hope to see you there. It should be fun. Again, Westwood High School in Washington Township, New Jersey, 12 o'clock on this Sunday. Alrighty, just another thing, the Fairlawn Radio Club will be open tomorrow night at 6 p.m. For those who are interested. And you are welcome to come down up to 9:30 and operate the station, see what's going on down there, and converse and learn all sorts of wonderful things. Alrighty. With no further ado, let's go to WA2ISC with your comment, K2BAR.
K2BAR, WA2ISC. I upgraded my Arden nodes a couple days ago, but ran into some problems. So if you leave the checkbox where you keep your settings, things seem to get messed up. Had that problem with a bullet and an air router. But the third one, I decided to not have that checked, and went a lot more smoothly. I had to reconfigure it, but I ended up having to do that with the first two anyway. It was a the Loco 900 one.
That's interesting. Did you post a bug report noting which devices and what software versions you were coming from and to?
Yeah, it was on that Arden website.
Okay, so you did post the Arden website. That's important. That's great. That is absolutely wonderful. I'm sorry to hear that you had a little trouble, though. Alrighty. Anybody have any comments about that? Alrighty. That's fine. Bob, there is that option, and that was put in with much fanfare, and it's actually done well. So I'm kind of curious what software version you came from and to, and also what nodes gave you trouble. What kind of nodes were they?
Okay, it was going from 1.0 to 1.1. And it was a bullet M2. The other one was a air router, and the third one that didn't have so much trouble was the the one on 900 megahertz. So I think it's the Loco 9. Over.
Okay. Yeah. By the way, expect early next week, as soon as we get a warm day again, you can expect to see me every so often fly by on both 900 and 2.4 gig in my mobile that will be deployed. The antennas have been deployed for a while. The nodes aren't. It's just kind of goofy, but that's just the way it is. Alrighty. You said from version 1 to 1.1?
Yeah, it was like, what was it, 3.16 1.0, if I remember rightly, to 3.16 1.1.
Okay. Yeah, 3.16 1.1 is out. When did that come out?
Oh, it was a couple of days ago. It was announced on the Arden website.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to look. Well, what are the changes that they talked about in the change list?
Oh, it was something about fixing a patch to avoid denial of service or some such.
As in a denial of service attack?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. But that's all it was set for. Everything else was just minor bug fixes. No other features, per se?
That's about it.
Okay, very good. Just a couple of things. The node up on Garrett Mountain has had some antenna issues. I think that ice storm we had a couple of weeks back beat up on a TP-Link antenna pretty badly, and the radome came off. I'll be posting pictures of the new and the old antenna configuration after Saturday. Dave and 3UXK and I are going to take care of that instead of going to the Cherry Boy Ampus, which we'd like to go to, but as a practical matter, I think we have a maintenance problem that we have to take care of because this is just ridiculous. Plus the fact that TP-Link will be providing me with a replacement antenna or antennas, so I have two of them up there. Well, the other one's fine, at least from the ground it looks fine, but I don't trust it. So we're going to solve that, but we're going to put up a new Ubiquiti MIMO antenna, was an AMO, whatever it is, the 10 dB one. So, it's cross-polarized, but omnidirectional. So, we'll see. Alrighty. Anybody else have any questions on the mesh? Okay, Bob, anything else? WA2ISC, K2VR, anything else? Alrighty. I don't know what happened to Bob. KB2BKD, I think it was. Another Bob. We have two questions from two Bobs. So, Bob, what's your question? K2BAR.
Okay, this is KD2BKD. Hopefully I'm coming in. I put a little longer antenna on the HT, and I'm using a mic now. My question is on grounding an antenna in the attic. Does it need to be grounded? And if so, would it be good enough for me to just ground that antenna to the closest copper vent pipe in the attic or to a central air conditioning duct that runs in the attic? Both of those are going to be at least 20 feet from this attic antenna. Also, the cabling from where my radio will be to this place in the attic will only be about 20 feet directly up. So that's my first question.
Okay, what antenna are we talking about? And what power level would you be anticipating?
It would be just a 2-meter antenna, 2-meter 70-centimeter antenna. Power level would be no more than 75 watts. Probably start off with 25 watts, no more than 75.
Okay, so this is an FM operation. These are vertical antenna with a ground plane that's already built into the antenna. The answer to your question is no. Do not ground the dang thing. You'll just be throwing RF all over God's green earth in your attic and across your house. It'd be better not to. Just out of curiosity, is there a compelling reason why you can't put an antenna outside?
NJ2BS, repeat.
I was looking into putting an antenna outside. I personally have no problem putting an antenna outside. I've looked at some of the suggestions of grounding such an antenna. The antenna would be mounted diagonally across from where my electrical system comes in on from the pole with the main grounding rod. So, and that would probably be maybe a 40-foot cable because I have to get into the corner. So now the difference between putting an antenna, now the grounding, from what I have read and researched, requires a bonded ground wire or bonded ground spike from one corner bonded with 6-gauge wire to the bonding of the main grounding rod by.
Well, okay, so Bob, let me simplify this a little bit for you. You know, it's a wonderful idea to ground your antennas and blah, blah, blah. They don't have to be bonded to the house ground. You know, honest. You know, in fact, if you have coax coming down your house, you know, where is your ham shack? Let's assume that the antenna was on the roof. Let's just assume that for a moment. Is your ham shack on a ground floor, an elevated floor, a basement? Where is it?
It's in the endmost garage. It's a bi-level. I would go and put the antenna probably on a side mount on that side of the house. And it would be go up, I would put it on a 10-foot pole.
How would it get a 10-foot pole on your roof, right?
I would do a side mount on the house, on the gable end.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's pretty straightforward. You would bring the coax down, and the bottom of the gable mount, you know, the metal on the pole or whatever, you just run a wire straight down to a ground rod right below it, into the bushes or whatever you got handy, and call it square and be done with it. Don't even think about it. Here's a dirty little secret. Awful lot of hams have, you know, VHF and UHF omni antennas on their roof, you know, literally on their roof, and they're not grounded, and they just unplug when their antenna when they're not using it, if they even bother to do that. You know, it all depends on how lightning paranoid you are and how many times you've been bitten, if at all. So, you know, my honest opinion is, you know, good electrical practice is to ground it. And that's fine. I'm blessed with a tower right outside my shack window. So, you know, if the antenna is mounted on the tower, then guess what? It's grounded because everything's bonded to the tower. Having said that, you know, you literally could take a side mount on your house, put a pole there, just run a cable straight down to the, you know, ground cable, ground wire to the ground rod and be done with it, and then feed your coax in wherever you have to. And if you can, you can, if the antenna's, you know, conductive and stuff like that, you can use the shield and a ground rod, a lightning arrestor at ground as your ground conductor, and save yourself the trouble of doing that. You'll need a separate thing. But don't go the Zirko. I mean, you know, there's a thousand ways to over-engineer this, and NEC notwithstanding, you know, some things are just ridiculously overdone.
Okay, thanks for that information. Now, another question is, I do Skywarn races, so when there's storms out there, I'll be on the radio. So would it be better to have another antenna in the attic and then one outside if there's a storm? Go to the attic antenna. Hopefully that'll get me where I gotta get to on the radio.
Yeah, generically that's true. Here's a dirty little secret, because I've done the same thing. I actually embedded some vertical dipoles in a wall in my house by the sheetrock. So while they're not fully resonant, they're close enough. I have a 6 meter one, a 2 meter one, a 220 and a 440 antenna. That basically a split dipole, and they're coax fed. And they're not perfect SWRs, but they're good enough. And they're on a first floor wall, if you can believe it. My house is about 6 feet elevated off the ground at that point. The ground is about 4 feet elevated off the street, so it's not too bad. Your house is opaque to electronics. So let's think about this. Today, without any of your ham stuff there, you've got a non-conductive shell, you know, unless you've got aluminum siding, but, you know, you've got a non-conductive shell wrapped around your body with a bunch of wires running in it, a bunch of ventilation ducts, HVAC stuff, all kinds of metal stuff. And ask yourself, does it get hit by lightning? Answer, no. Not generally. I mean, yeah, you do hear occasionally a house gets hit by lightning and thing torches up and has a fire, blah, 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 sure. But it is unlikely that the incremental addition of your ham antenna in your attic is going to be of significant note to attract lightning.
All right, thanks for that information. This house did get hit by a lightning one time. No, well, not directly, I guess. It hit a tree about 150 feet away from the house. The lightning bolt ricocheted off of that. It hit the back doorbell of the house. The doorbell actually rang. I actually went to the door to see if anybody was there. Nobody was there. I didn't even know it hit the. I didn't know the lightning hit the doorbell. And then about, I guess, 6 months later, while cutting the grass or working in the garden, I saw a doorbell button at the back fence of the house, which is about 60 feet from the house, just laying in the garden. And it was basically 90 degrees from the house straight out. And I looked at the house at that time and noticed that there was no more doorbell button there. And
You have me laughing. That's hilarious. That is absolutely hilarious. But it wasn't your attic antenna that was hit. It was something inside the house. I mean, away from the house. And lightning has a way of finding a way to ground. Yes, siree, it does. It does. So, you know, that's kind of my point. We have all these. I mean, but most houses, unless they're metal boxes, you know, essentially are opaque to lightning. So you have no more of a chance. Well, the reason why you have more of a chance to get hit with an antenna outside the house than inside the house is that it's a pointy conductive object standing up above the house. You know, just like they tell you, don't be the guy standing, you know, out in the open in the golf course, you know, wondering why, you know, this lightning going to come and fry you, because you're the highest thing on the ground and it seeks the highest thing. So if your antenna's inside the attic, chances are it's not the highest thing. There'll be other things that'll be higher. So I think you're good to go for your emergency antenna. But, you know, for your other stuff, I think you're good to go as well. I mean, get something outside. And let me just say this, Bob. More is better.
All right, thank you. You saved me almost $100 in 6-gauge cabled wire going to a bonded connection diagonally across the house. Thank you very much.
Well, let's also keep in mind, if it's diagonally across, the conductive path is not going to likely be the most efficient. Therefore, it's a waste of time and money. So you might consider that too. I would come straight down with your coax to a lightning arrestor, mount it on a ground rod, and then distribute your coax wherever you got to go from there, if that's feasible. I mean, can you put the antenna on the same side of the house as your ham shack?
Absolutely. I plan on doing that and coming right into it. It's 40 feet of coax. I'll put the 400 on there, and that should do it. And I can put a ground rod that's very close to directly under it. It's basically, I'm going to put it on the side, but there's a garden around the corner, so it would make a little turn around the corner. The ground rod, I don't think that would be any problem. I would use a white 8 or 10 gauge wire, and I would hopefully be able to find white coax. If not, I can't find 400, I'll go with a marine coax, so it's white, and it'll make the DLY happier then, so it's not a black wire coming down the house.
Exactly. Oh, my wife is, she just got out of the car, but she is the most patient person in the world when it comes to coaxes. You know, my wife is not worried about one coax. You know, she has asked me, she said, you know, I'm wondering if you need new coax. But I have other issues. My ham shack is on the third floor, so I have to be really thoughtful as to how I go about doing things like this. But anyway, it's all happy. But my ground entry plate to my ham shack is bonded to the tower, and the tower's got a supplemental piece of cabling to come down to bond the tower to ground. But that's not even necessary. Tower provides more than an adequate conductive path to ground. And I've got two ground rods tied to two different legs at the base. And even though it looks like it's going into the foundation of the tower, they actually only go through the top cap at the edge. The cap is actually 4 inches at the top, or 6 inches at the top, and then underneath is all soil. And it's, so the ground rods are in soil, not through the concrete. All right. Anything else, Mr. Bob?
No, you've answered all my questions. Thank you very much. This is KD2BKD.
All righty, very good. Well, hopefully we'll see you at the auction on Sunday. I'm a large, gregarious guy known for my subtle approach to everything. Hi. So hopefully we'll see you at the auction. Maybe even we'll see some of you guys at the the sale on tomorrow night. Anyway, anybody else have any questions about grounding or antennas, et cetera?
Comment?
Please.
W2SC, good evening, Gordon. A couple of things. I'm a fan of antennas that are electrically DC shorted. So if you put an ohmmeter between the center conductor of your transmission line and your shield, you get a DC short. When you get an antenna that's outside, you get static buildup due to precipitation of various types, and you want to bleed that static off, and that's where ground system really comes into play. If you get a nearby lightning strike, not necessarily direct on the house, but nearby, you will induce voltages and currents into the antenna system, and that will have to go someplace. And you certainly don't want it to go into the rig, so if there's a really bad storm, you might want to think twice about having the rig or other expensive electronics connected. And let me let it drop here. The other thing is, houses are not necessarily opaque to radio, Gordon. Older houses used metal mesh with plaster, and that's fairly resistive to HF and even UHF and some VHF. Mylar over foam, styrofoam, which is used as an underlayment underneath some sidings. Mylar will suppress RF by a fair amount, attenuate it. And also foam-faced insulation, not foam-faced, aluminum-faced insulation in the walls will also have a nasty effect on RF. W2SE.
All of which is true. I am speaking from a bias viewpoint. While I have an older home that at one point or another had almost every one of those things you talked about, today my house has paper-backed insulation. It has no plaster and lath except in one room on the second floor. It's the bathroom. All the other plaster and lath has been ripped from the house systematically over the years. And what else? They started to use Mylar, aluminized Mylar wrap, and before they even unpackaged it, I said, "Is that aluminum?" And they said, "Yep." I said, "No good." Said in the contract that you got to use non-conductive materials for the wrap. So I had to take it back to the supply and come back. 30 minutes later, he was back with his crew wrapping my house happily and cheerfully. So yes, I totally get it. That's good advice, Bruce. Very good advice. We forgot the metal roof. We don't have a metal roof either, but I think in my next house I'll have a metal roof. They're noisy, but God, they're wonderful. And, you know, my grandchildren will be replacing it. Yeah.
And there's always aluminum siding, which is rarely, if ever, bonded together.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't mention that. I didn't have aluminum siding in the house. But anyway, we made up for it with some 1920s era lath and plaster. Actually, the mesh over the lath, that was nasty. God, that was brutal to get the plaster up. The plaster they put underneath was not a finished plaster. It was more like a concrete. And I can assure you getting rid of that was unfun. Alrighty, any other thoughts?
NJ2BS, repeat.
And not a major factor, Gordon, but the low E windows that have coatings on them for heat loss, those coatings are also conductive.
Yeah, mine are just old enough not to have that. But good point. Good point. I think you doubled with somebody. Who's the other station?
W2TU, just a comment. When we redid our house over here, we did a soy-based spray foam insulation, and I cannot walk around my house now with an HT because it is an RF barrier.
The soy-based stuff is RF shielding?
Yes, I was able to. Not only was I able to walk around with an HT 2 watts in the house before we finished sheetrocking and putting all the soy-based, but I was able to also make it two blocks to the Cablevision, so I was able to get a Wi-Fi signal, which I don't get anymore.
That's fascinating. Do you know the name of the material?
No, I don't remember, but I know that it did spend more money than it's a non-V, VC off-gassing, purple-colored soy product.
Yeah. Yes. For the joys and pleasures of being environmentally friendly, you end up with all sorts of fun and games in the way of unanticipated challenges. All righty, any other comments?
K2EIR.
Good, Howie.
First of all, why don't you identify?
WBAR.
Okay. I just to reinforce what FE said, in my last apartment, I sometimes used rain gutter and sometimes had about 80 feet of very, very thin wire, like number 32 or something, as an antenna. And I used to always disconnect it, the coax from the equipment, just to be safe, because I had no lightning arresters or whatever. Again, I was apartment bound. But I also got in the habit of discharging any static buildup on that coax by just, you know, grounding the connector to, you know, a screw on the light socket or something like that. But you literally could see a quarter-inch spark many days without any storms around. Static does build up, which makes it advisable for any length of wire to be disconnected from the rigs whenever you're not in use. And I haven't had any problem myself indoors, attic or otherwise, but I don't know if it makes much difference. As you said, RF can come in. That means RF, and I think that would pertain to static as well, although it, you know, sometimes it's the air. And I'll just point that out, you know, so if you want to play it safe, disconnecting the coax completely. I don't trust switches for it, unless you have, you know, again, a static discharge system, lightning arrest or whatever. I think the safest bet is to completely disconnect the cables when not in use. K2EIR.
Yeah, you certainly can do that. I've been very lucky, and I don't know why, because, you know, but the tower and the antennas are right here. Never had any lightning problems. I do have about 900 feet away a 350-foot Cablevision head-end tower, which is kind of handy. It's about 900 feet away. So that's, you know, interesting as a possibility. The other part about this is that I also have some really nice switches, and all my antennas are grounded when they're not in use, and I actually switch the radio to a shorted position before, you know, when I'm not using it. So it goes to, off into space, as it were. I don't necessarily disconnect the radios themselves, but I have enough switches on my switchboard to choke a horse. So, you know, about a dozen years ago, I made a ridiculous investment in 4-port and 2-port isolating switches. And in all honesty, I really need to renew that board now, because the matrix doesn't match what I have in the way of equipment these days. But that's a game for a future day. And I might actually swap out all my coaxes at some point, but that's another matter. I would hate to waste the time and money to do that if the coax is in good shape, but we'll see. I'd have to pull them all down and recheck them, and there's a lot of things that need to be redone in my antenna farm, so maybe, just maybe, this is the year. We'll see. I've been saying that for 3 years now, but this year might actually be a better year for it all. Better physically, logistically, and economically. So, it's all good. Anybody else? Alrighty, very good. Well, just a reminder again, the Barra auction is Sunday at Westwood High School in Washington Township. Doors open at noon, and the auctioning will start at 1. And, of course, there'll be food there, yummy food, actually. And what else can I tell you? That's about it. Fairlawn, I guess, it'll open tomorrow at 6. And it's not a weather-permitting thing. It'll happen because the afternoon after the snow comes. The afternoon's going to be a little rainy, and it's going to melt things a little bit and kind of do that. I would recommend charging up some batteries, because I think we're going to have some weather over the weekend, or tomorrow into the weekend, and then again on Tuesday. So That's another thought, too. Just a question for Bob, if I may, KD2BKD. Bob, where is the Skywarn net that you inhabit? Is it on 1070 again?
Yeah, it is. I haven't heard any activity on that repeater, except every half an hour it tells you that it's out there.
Yeah, well, it's not in the old glory spot it used to be in, so that's a problem. I can say this, if you would like to run a Skywarn net on this repeater, you are more than welcome to. I'm the trustee, so it's not a big problem. Just shoot me a note at w2ttt@arrl.net. Just let me know what you want to do. In fact, others are welcome to run nets on the repeater, too. Just let me know what you have in mind, and you're welcome to do this. Like that there. Tomorrow night I'm going to be messing with some mesh network stuff down at Farallon. So if you want to see and play that with that, you're welcome to come and take a look what we're messing with. And guess that's all I have right now. Anything else from anybody?
NJ2BS, repeat.
Yeah, W2TU, let me see if I have it. All right, Farallon also, Saturday morning, 9:30 a.m., walk-ins are allowed for a VE session. So if anybody wants to come in, do an upgrade, or you know somebody who's been studying and wants to take a poke at it, 9:30 in the morning at the Farallon Club.
This is at the Farallon Community Center, 10-10 20th Street. When you walk in, just ask for the radio club. They'll point you through to the magic inner sanctum of the radio club. And we'll be there tomorrow night, too, if you have any questions and want to do a dry run before your test session. Thank you for adding that, Chris. That's great.
All right. Most of the time, Bob is talking about the one up in Westwood, Washington Township, so figured I would just throw it in there.
Yeah, see, I haven't heard Don on in this week or last week, for that matter, so I'm not sure what's going on. I'm going to hopefully see him on Sunday, and we will find out. And if I don't see him on Sunday, I'm going to ask about that. That's not good. Anyway, just a reminder that Comtech Group, Charlie Oscar Mike Tango Echo Charlie Hotel, Golf Romeo Oscar Uniform Papa, Comtech Group, Yahoo Group is where we'll still see the roster and other resources, and feel free to post stuff. I post something the other day, or today I guess it was. It was there yesterday on chokes used to, for RF suppression in the ham shack. It's a wonderful way of doing it, and there were some really simple and straightforward ways to get that done, so you might want to take a look at that. Nice article that someone else had posted on one of the email groups, and I just liked it so much so I put the URL for it on the Comtech group, so you are welcome. And if you're not a member of the Comtech group, just apply and I'll approve you. So, any other questions or comments or confusions for the TechNet?
K2BAR. This is AJ4WD.
Rachel, good evening, ma'am. How are you and what can we do for you?
Well, I've got two items. Number one, I also have one of those alpha switches, and it puts all the other antennas to ground except the one that you've selected, and it does have that center position where everything's put to ground. And that's been very important in Florida, which is, I think, the nation's capital for lightning strikes. I've had people on the left and the right of me get hit, but fortunately, I've not been hit by lightning. And you have to always remember, when you're running aground, you want nice, gentle bends, because lightning will jump away if it's a sharp curve. Preferably, there are no bends, but if you do have to put a bend in your earth ground, make sure it's a gentle bend.
Yeah, and a gentle bend in the direction of ground, so slope it down to the ground rod. Just don't bring it down in a 90-degree shot to the ground rod. Yeah, absolutely. Good point. And just curious, actually it's a statement. The lightning capital of the United States is Tampa, St. Pete, that whole Tampa Bay area. The only place in the world that's worse is someplace in Thailand.
Second point, K2BAR, AJ4WD. I have just purchased a new switching power supply on eBay, and I was planning to go to Fairlawn tomorrow night to be able to look at it and see how clean the DC out is and make sure that everything is up to snuff. It's a power supply that I bought from Open Box literally the box was still sealed but had some significant damage to two of the corners. Looked like maybe it was tossed about a little bit too much. But it has a 90-day warranty on it from the manufacturer. It was sold as an eBay bid second. And I was wondering, is there anything that we have at Fairlawn? Or, Gordon, do you have something that I could use as a load? It's a 45-amp power supply, so I'd like to put a load of, like maybe 22 or 23 amps on it.
That could be done. We would just wire up a power cable to it for maybe one of the HF rigs and just go into CW and hammer away. That'll give us 20 amps of load, no problem.
Comment,
go.
101 HF radio typically only draws 16 to 17 amps, Gordon, key down.
Yeah, but we can add more. That shouldn't be a problem.
W2SE, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm well aware of that, so, in fact, I was going to bring one of those little power pole power meters, inline power meters, so we could actually measure how much current we're pulling through it.
Yeah, I had several of those. One other comment while I have it right now. Way back in my high school days, we had a 450-foot steel tower on top of about a 200-foot building. And a lightning strike came down, and I don't know if it hit the tower, but it bypassed the tower, bypassed the building, went down through the middle of the courtyard. The building was in a figure-eight configuration, and gouged a nice little hole in the ground in the middle of the courtyard. So lightning does not always strike the tallest thing in the neighborhood.
That is true. Very nice. Which high school did you go to? Bruce, what high school was this?
This was Brooklyn Tech High School in Brooklyn in Fort Greene.
Yeah, I was figuring it was Brooklyn Tech. Excellent. Okay, anybody else with comments? Okay, Rachel, do you have any more?
That was it. So hopefully I'll see you guys at Fairlawn tomorrow night. AJ4WD, back to net.
Alrighty. Very, very good. Anything else from anybody for the net?
NJ2BS, repeat.
Oh, that's just darn wonderful. Okay, well, all right, well, I've got a half a sandwich to eat because I don't want to eat it heavy at this point, but I would like to do that, and if we don't have any more, I think I'm going to avail myself of that opportunity. I do have an errand to run, but I want to go inside and eat that first. Gonna run outside. I just realized I'm below half a tank. So, rule one: get more gas. So I'm gonna go do that. in a little bit, and probably be on 442 when I make that run. But it's really nice everybody jump in tonight. Bob, thank you for your questions. Bruce and Chris and Rachel, thank you for your comments. And Howie as well. One other thing. We do have an announcement. WATMP, what is your intention for your C4 FM connectivity on 140, what was it, on 440, I'll forget what the repeater is, so I'll let you talk about it. What's the connectivity activity for tomorrow night and Saturday?
Okay, Gordon. Tomorrow night, good question. For the group, I've been running the C4 FM net on 442.9. This weekend, this Friday, I will link it. Friday night, I will link it to the Minnesota group, and I'll let that run through tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is the. I'll switch to the America room, where the International Wires X net will be on. So it'll be Minnesota through tomorrow night, through Friday night to Saturday night, when we switch over to the America room. Tuesday night, we're going to be back, Monday night, we're back on Minnesota for the Minnesota TechNet, which has been pretty interesting. They always have a guest speaker. And Tuesday night is MyNet, and we're going to be linking to DMR New York State. So if you have a DMR radio, you can now join the net, and it's we now call it the Chestnut Ridge Digital Net, because we have folks on from DMR and from C4FM. It's the perfect marriage of the two digital protocols. Back to net control.
Yeah, and I have to get my radio program properly with that. The code plug I have is just not right. Something's goofy. Alrighty, very good. So that's great. Anybody have any questions about C4FM or DMR? Okay, well, thank you, Jim. Anything more from you?
No, that's about it. To be clear, Tuesday night you can join the net either on New York State DMR or on 442.9 C4FM. Back to net control.
Yeah, those are the two digital protocols I have. I mean, in my car, in my shack, I have a C4FM radio and... pretty soon I'll have a DMR radio in each as well. I just got to get the DMR squared away. And I also, frankly, have to set up the C4FM radio in the ham shack. Right now it's in kind of go-kit mode, and I need to make that so that it can make a transition pretty quickly. And dedicate some antennas to it, too. When Bob was asking about his attic antennas, I was chuckling a little bit because... when the weather gets nice, my roof will look like a porcupine even more than it does now. It's basically, I'm going to make a nice rack to hold a bunch of either monobanders or multiband FM antennas for 2, 220, 440, as the case may be, and probably an extra one for 6. Been meaning to do this for a while, and I think it'll be really kind of cool the way I'm going to set it up. So, on that note, 73, if anyone or someone has another comment. Okay, was there another station with no modulation?
That wasn't me, but I do have a question, K2EIR.
Go ahead, Howie.
Okay, I was so thrilled with that common mode choke piece that you sent me, and it was so relevant to stuff that was happening on the IC7300 group. I posted it there, and because I know the moderators don't like stuff that doesn't really pertain to the 7300, although they've let this thread run for quite a while. I suggested that if people want to discuss it further, that they come over to the contact group. And I hope I didn't make a mistake there. So the question really is, do you care who joins the contact group in terms of locality? Because the 7300 group has people from all over the world, as many Yahoo groups do, you know, most of the U.S., but certainly much beyond the New York City area.
No, au contraire, I don't mind at all. And, in fact, when we get the Echolink working, we'll encourage it even more. So that would be just hunky-dory and wonderful.
Okay. And just to give you a quick capsule summary, a lot of people had been asking, well, should I buy a 7300? Will it help me with noise? You know, is it a noisy receiver or whatever? And, of course, what people are facing all over, and we've talked about this before, is all kinds of devices now are in our environment and are emitting. And this travel, just like this article that you posted, you know, the monograph points out, it's traveling over your house wiring and other things like that, even ducting and so on. Most people don't understand, you know, about it. So there's been various discussions, you know, recommending shielded loop antennas. I've recommended the little mini whips, you know, where you might be able to locate that at the fringe of your property away from wiring, toroids, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a very common problem, and many people don't think about it the right way. So that's just the capsule summary I just wanted to pass along. Excuse me, or K2BAR from K2EIR, and my 73 to you.
Okay, Howie, very good. Thank you for that. K2BAR. So, there are a couple of things to think about here. One is there's a lot of, you know, conducted emissions that then re-radiate, and that can be nasty. A lot of that is not specified, and especially if it's over 30 megs, it's not even covered in the current rules for conducted emissions. So it's messy. So last summer, the FCC's, one of their advisory committees, the Technical Advisory Committee, actually put out a request for comments regarding noise and they had very specific, detailed questions, and they wanted responses. And I can tell you that the ARRL's response, specifically the bibliography that Ed Hare provided, was amazing. And I think the ARRL shares a council before the FCC with the Society of Broadcast Engineers. Surprise, surprise. And their comments were largely the same. I can tell you that AT&T's comments were started out as a mobility issue because, yes, all this house wiring stuff and stuff in your homes as noise is making its way up into the cellular bands and even the high cellular bands. We drop it. And by raising the noise floor on the receiver, it requires a higher power transmitter to be heard by the cell site. So that drains the battery on the mobile device, which makes the user experience less desirable. So we started with that, but I actually got a whole bunch of folks from across the corporation involved in providing input to the company's response and reply comments to that notice of inquiry last summer, and I was happy to do it, and I thoroughly enjoyed doing it. It kind of boggled the minds of my management because I'm in an IT organization, but it's been a good thing. Also, just for reference, if you have, you know, EMI, EMC issues, while I'm certainly on the Interval's EMC committee, there's a lot of things I truly am not expert in, and I would be more than happy.